is a production of Cornell University.
Good evening, everyone. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Jim Blair. I'm chair of the University Assembly. It's 4:34 on February 24th, and I'm calling this meeting of the Assembly to order. First, online is call for late additions to the agenda. I have one, which is the status of the UA's legislative agenda and my recommendations. Mr. Battaglia, do you have a late addition?
I submit resolution, UA Resolution 4, providing for a faculty advisor to the Office of Judicial Codes Counselor, is a late addition to the agenda.
Thank you. Are there other late additions to the agenda? Joseph?
Regarding open course evaluation based on Student Assembly Resolution 29.
Open course evaluations. Okay.
Thanks.
Are there others? Hearing none, I request the members' unanimous consent to amend the orders of the day for the following purposes. I regret to inform you that since the publication of our agenda, Dr. Corson Reichert is unable to attend. She had a conflicting meeting. That is also my fault. I thought I had coordinated with her office more thoroughly. I had not. And so there was a mistake and a miscommunication that I am responsible for. But also with the student health fee, debate going on. I think that there was, and certainly from our standpoint and from the university standpoint, I think we'd like to get through that before we can have a meaningful conversation fully with all the other aspects related to Gannett and healthcare. So we'll recover that, and I'll discuss that in my late edition. Separately, I regret to inform you that Vice President Murphy's plane from Florida has been delayed. She will not make it in time to be at the meeting. That is also why Ellis Lowe is unable to be here tonight. We also have some sickness, frozen pipes, and other sundry meetings, but we have achieved a quorum. So with those facts, I would like to amend the orders of the day to add 15 minutes to the JCC update to business of the day, item 4, add late addition of Blair status of legislative agenda and recommendations for 10 minutes, Battaglia introducing UAR4 for 10 minutes, and open course evaluations by Mr. Friedman for 5 minutes. Are there any objections? Hearing none, the orders of the day are amended. First item up is the minutes of January 27th, 2015. They were circulated to members prior to this meeting. Are there any additions, changes, edits? Motion to approve is on the floor. I ask, is there a second?
Second.
I ask for members' unanimous consent of the minutes of January 27, 2015, as presented to members. Are there any objections? Hearing none, they are approved by unanimous consent. Turning to reports from the assemblies. Student Assembly, Ms. Bailey.
To a busy start to the semester. A few of our resolutions so far have been regarding services and access to temporary breaks. There's a resolution coming up this week regarding some of the student assembly members.
Services for
like dining hall hours, things like that. We've also been working on with Joseph the open course evaluations. The healthy and transparency on the part of the administration, particularly regarding finances, is still a hot topic on the SA. And it's something we're looking forward to working on.
Questions for Ms. Bailey?
Election? You want to mention that? There's
oh, yes. Our elections. Our positions are due on Friday. And soon we will have a whole new group of assembly members.
To tag on to that, concurrent with the SA elections are the two student assembly appointed related UA members. So that election is also part of that.
And when will those results be known unless there's a problem or contest of the election results?
March 19th, I believe.
So before our next, before our March meeting on March 24th.
Hope.
We hope. Okay, noted. GPSA update, Mr. Walworth.
It's, since last update we gave, we've had a change in our representation in the UA. Asia has been elected to be our new vice president for operations, and so now Jeffrey will be our new UA representative. We are looking in at the GPSA. We're now looking at passing a resolution on greater transparency, which we will be presenting probably 2 weeks from now. Also, we formed a new ad hoc committee on sustainability to try and work with the Office of Sustainability to further Cornell's carbon neutrality goals.
We regret, Teja, congratulations, and we regret to lose you. Welcome back, Jeffrey Bergfalk. And Richard, on transparency. Transparency in what regard? Can I ask for a little more detail?
Transparency as related to new policy made at the university, things such as new fees or changes to our stipends, which are currently done in such a way that executive board members and other members are allowed to participate in the process, and there is no wider conversation with the full GPSA or public comment or anything like that. These decisions, and they sort of come to us, and so many students feel there is not enough transparency in those processes.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Walworth? Professor Wayne.
The word used to be integrity, and it was each individual had integrity of data. And as soon as the onus gets put to the institution, away from the person, I think you end up with less transparency.
Other questions and comments? Employee Assembly, Mr. Meese is absent. I was not expecting that. Is there anybody from the Employee Assembly who might have an update? Gina, I don't know whether you can inform us or no.
Again, briefly, there are a couple deadlines coming up. The soon, employees will be receiving their Employee Assembly update, but there's a recognition awards deadline of this Friday. Also, folks should have received notification that registration is open now for the Charter Day activities. Let's see, what else was there? Bear with me just a sec. I'm not sure quite what else. He probably would have had more of a report, but...
Thank you for any light you can shed. If anybody has questions about the status of EA agenda items, you can send them to me. We'll get them to Mr. Meese. Faculty Senate, Dean Burns sends his apologies. He was called away for medical reasons, family medical reasons. Professor Booker, do you have an update?
Yeah, there were a couple of issues that were covered that might be important. One is the whole idea of a new professorial title.
I'm sorry, I'm having trouble hearing you, Ron.
The faculty senate actually has control over faculty titles.
Yes.
You know, and there's a new title that's being adopted. That's their now policy director. So it's going to be faculty. That was discussed. It looks like a number of the colleges in law school, the Johnson School and the Community College, have all voted to adopt that title. There was also a thing on the presidential inauguration. There was a resolution that was floated to actually cancel classes for the inauguration process, and then we got word back to the president that they didn't want to be able to have a discussion on how she said, no, we want this class. We were for inauguration. So she seems to be kind of obvious. There was also an update on the provost search, if we know about that. And also, there was a long presentation by Vice Provost Mark Brown and Senior Vice Provost Judith Appleton and Senior Vice Provost Mark Brown on the I'm sure most people think of that. It's a major initiative on campus.
Thank you. Questions for Professor Booker?
Just to tag on to that, I think it may be of interest to this assembly to invite Laura Brown and Judith Appleton to talk about the Engage Cornell. I know they are going to different assemblies to talk about exactly what that is and how to.
Laura Brown and
Judith Appleton.
She's the lead, and she's working with an assembly.
Okay. Well, we'll take that up in my late edition. It's relevant. Other questions for Professor Booker? Hearing none.
We have a discussion about the open space policy and
I chair that committee. If there are questions on it, I can answer them. Other questions? Hearing none, turning to committee updates. Executive Committee, Mr. Battaglia.
Thank you, Mr. Blair. A couple updates. First off, the University Assembly received a letter from Catherine Lay, Class of 2015, requesting support for the UA support by divestment. That letter was attached to the agenda and has been referred to the CIC for further follow-up. Additionally, President Scorton will be at our meeting on March 25th. If you have items that you'd like to ask him, please submit them to the chair by March 2nd. Also, for the 2016 annual JCC Search Committee, the UA has to appoint its member. We have chosen to recommend Ms. Sarah Balick. As of now, prior to her serving, there is no undergraduate on the committee. Ms. Balick is well-versed in the issues of the UA, of the issues of the CJC, and will be a valuable asset to the committee. She has accepted the nomination pending UA approval.
With that agenda item, are there any objections with appointing Sarah Balick to be the UA's representative on the JCC Search Committee for academic year 2016? Hearing none, Ms. Balick, you are appointed, and thank you for your willingness to serve.
Continuing, an official welcome to Jeffrey Bergfalk to the University Assembly, as well as our new clerk, who is replacing our former clerk, Noah.
Vishal,
I'm sorry. I apologize. It'll take me a little while to get that right. But welcome. Welcome. We're very glad to have you.
And with that, I turn it over to the chair about a reminder about attendance.
Attendance. UA attendance policy. If you miss two sessions over or two meetings over the session, I am supposed to come before you and ask for a vote as to whether you want that member's participation in UA continued or replaced. We have not vigorously enforce that policy, but we do have a handful of folks that have missed a significant number of meetings. I have talked to the appropriate assembly reps to confirm that those members are intend to be active, and I'm doing that in the sense because the meetings we have between now and the end of the year are the most important. They deal with the hardest issues. We actually do resolve and pass the most meaningful resolutions traditionally between now and May. And so active participation and ability to be here is needed. So if you don't feel you can serve, please talk to your constituent assembly. And I'm preaching a bit to the choir here, but please corral your colleagues and make sure that they're willing to serve. I also would add, with regard to the provost search, As I mentioned at the last meeting, I got your inputs collectively from the assembly. I typed up five or six paragraphs that I vetted through the exec and some others who provided some inputs and have sent that to the provost search as the UA's input to the characteristics and things that we want them to look for in a provost. So that tasking has been met. Other things, Mr. Battaglia?
That is all.
Questions for the UA exec? None, then Campus Infrastructure Committee, Mr. LaSalle.
So I reached out to, we had a meeting 2 weeks ago and formed a subcommittee to evaluate the viability of presenting a resolution that would be in harmony with the other resolutions that deal with divestment to fossil fuels, and that I don't believe that the subcommittee has met yet. We received a draft change in charge from the Campus Planning Committee. The Campus Planning Committee meets tomorrow. I will be in attendance there, and that's a formal document that they're looking to have a charge that says this is what we offer, and it has to interleave with the UA's charter and bylaws, how we represent ourselves to that group. And we are also working out a springtime presentation where they could come and present to this body upcoming projects for the next 2 years, what's on the horizon, and field any questions from this body. So that's what I'm going to do in the next little bit. That's about it.
The Campus Planning Committee is an associated committee of the University Assembly, which means it's a committee that runs under facilities, but it's also a committee under our purview. And for the past year, their establishing document, the wording in their establishing document, and who's appointed and who's a voting member is different than what is in our UA bylaws. So at the start of the year, we began the process of reconciling the differences. And I think we've come to an agreement in principle, and they're going to hold a meeting soon, and we'll be able to bring it forward depending on if they, in fact, support it. Other questions for Mr. Lissell? Then Campus Welfare Committee, Ms. Best.
So the last meeting we attended did have a couple of roundtable discussions in preparation of visits to the UA this first. An anticipated visit from university diversity officers that's still awaiting scheduling, and the second, a visit from Dr. Thorsten Reichert, which, is that happening today?
It will not be happening today, but I will address how we might recapture that in the late edition.
Okay, so the Campus Welfare Committee has been plagued by attendance problems this year, so I don't know how productive those roundtables were. The second was just last week, so I attempted to move the date of the CWC meeting to get more attendance. Dr. Booker was there, and we did talk about the information that Susan Murphy's office shared with us about the health fee. We would have liked to engage more members of the CWC in that conversation in preparation for a visit from D.C. Murphy and Dr. Thorsten Reichert. So if they will be coming, then we'll pick that up again at the next CWC meeting. So the meeting prior to that, I asked them to look at the qualitative report on campus climate for diversity by Professor Hurtado. This is available on the diversity website, Cornell Diversity website. One of the tasks that we were charged with this year was to make sure the University Diversity Council makes a list of diversity initiatives available to assemblies, but that's actually available on their website. And it looks like it's pretty well updated, so that's under control. So we thought we would instead talk to them about new plans in the wake of the what they call the Hurtado Report, which was a qualitative study. So if we do slate the UDOs for a meeting this spring at the UA, then we'll also pick up that roundtable discussion about that report at the next CWC meeting. Is that clear? Does that make sense?
Just me. Does it to members?
Okay. So I only have a couple more quick updates. I'm coordinating a panel to select a new logo to represent Cornell's commitment to diversity and inclusion, and CWC members, a lot of them, have agreed to serve on that, so that's something that's going well, and we have 32 designs submitted, and they're really great, so that's something fun and exciting. And then the last thing is we are awaiting scheduling of the UDO, and then if there's time, we could also get a slot for Linda Cole Howe, who runs the HR survey of parents using Cornell Child Care Program. She presented that to us at our first meeting. And in general, satisfaction was very high, and it was an interesting short presentation. If she can't make one of the UA meetings, then I'll include a summary of that in my final report, so that's something for the UA success to consider. That's it.
Thank you. Questions for Ms. Best?
Question. Did you mention also the staffing needs, the committee to select the president of the ward for person?
I didn't mention that because I agreed to serve on it,
looking for one
or two people.
Okay.
But I was going to ask if someone else wants to serve in my place, because I already served on another committee, and in the spirit of diversity, essentially no one else should. I have my own biases, probably. So, but thanks for reading that up. I forgot to ask if someone else wants to do it. Yeah.
So are you asking for if there's anybody, a volunteer,
yeah,
to contact you?
Anybody else interested? Maybe you can explain what the award is.
You probably know more than I. It's a new award coming out through that will tie into the Toward New Destinations Diversity Initiative. It will be given out this year. Lynette Chappelle Williams is in her office is organizing it, and I'm not quite sure how candidates are vetted. Actually, I don't know the answer to that, but her office should reach out to the Campus Welfare Committee to help staff the selection committee. So
awesome.
If you're interested in serving on that, and just a couple in-person meetings, you'll have to read the nominations, and I have no idea how many people were nominated. But if you're interested in doing that, please email me. It's CMB466, but you can find me.
Or you can contact the Office of the Assemblies, or you can contact me as the chair. We'll get it to her.
Okay.
Cogent Judicial Committee, Professor Wayne.
We had a great meeting. It was a great meeting. I probably won't say much about it because the best part is to come here. Amanda and Emily talked about their view of the campus code of conduct and policy 6.4. And I'll talk about 6.4 in a minute. And then Amanda and Sarah talked about getting together the campus code of conduct, the policy 6.4, the code of academic integrity, and putting it together with other things that were working on the thing. So, which was just great. It was just great. You'll hear about it from them.
Any questions for Professor Wayne? All right. Liaison status, the Council for Sexual Violence Prevention, Ms. Odessa, sends her apologies. She's the one with the frozen pipes today. I guess they froze last night. She wondered if Ms. Balick might have an update. Throw you under a bus, mm-hmm. Ms. Balick.
No, it's fine. We had a meeting a couple of weeks ago. We talked a little bit about some of the policies that we're working on for the role of domestic violence. Someone from the Ithaca Advocacy Center spoke. Her name is Heather. And also someone from CDC, whose name I do not honestly remember off the top of my head, because I'm not even advanced notice about this announcement. Also spoke about things that we can do to address domestic violence issues on campus.
Meaningful discussions, things moving forward?
I think they were definitely meaningful discussions, and tangible outcomes should be coming from the working groups, which meet separately.
Okay.
The full council.
Questions from Ms. Bailey?
I could add something. There's a one of the folks groups is working on a faculty event to address the campus violence. We work with the faculty members primarily not just from Cornell, but from a number of different universities and colleges across the country, and a number of other initiatives that are. There's a chance that the university will actually offer the funds to support research in the area of sexual violence. And the plan, but that's going to be on April 28th. That actually looks interesting.
Thank you, and I'll also mention that Lynette Chappell-Williams will be at the Leadership Breakfast this Thursday for those in here who will be attending, and no doubt she'll give us an update as well. Turning to the Policy Advisory Group, Professor Lowe was unable to make it in from Florida due to the weather. I'm not sure what's happening down there, but whatever's happening, all the people seem to be getting stuck in Florida. And so, Professor Wayne, can you update us on the last Policy Advisory Group meeting?
I can. First thing I'll say something about frozen pipes. Value hardware, I'm sure everybody else does it, but I had an emergency, and they have this fiberglass tape that's water activated. So if you have a leaking pipe, you can quickly. In 30 minutes, you're set, which is when we started setting. It happened at a terrible time.
That's wonderful. Let's return to the orders of the day.
I went to the policy advisor group because Amanda had talked to the CJC about things in the policy 6.4 and the campus code that weren't aligned. So I went there, and basically, the Department of Education has interpreted the law a certain way and said, if you don't follow the way we interpret the law, we're not going to give you any money for anything. So basically, in my opinion, the policy advisory group tries to get the law of the policy consistent, the wording of the policy, consistent with the Department of Education. So when I went there, essentially, it was a discussion about the wording of the policy to make it as consistent with the Department of Education's policy as possible. However, I did present Amanda's observations of what went on. So, for example, if you're temporarily suspended in the campus code, you can appeal your 5 days to appeal the suspension. But in the policy, there's no, it's not such an appeal process, not such a clear one. And it seems like you could get kicked out easily, more easily. And so I gave the policy advisor who suggested wording how to change that for the next meeting, which will be a more substantial instead of just changing words that align to the Department of
Education. Were they receptive?
Very receptive. And then that's definitely last year.
Questions for Professor Wayne? Hearing none, then we'll turn to the business of the day. First up is item 6.3, UA Resolution 3 for 8 minutes. I'd ask Professor Wayne to join me up front.
Joseph is here.
Joseph may also join me up front as applicable. Members have copies of the resolution that was sent to you earlier. You also have copies in your packets today. I want to introduce briefly, since I took the cast from the last meeting to recast CJC Resolution 2 into UAR3. Basically, lines 1 through 6 are no change. Lines 7 through 13, this was a concern raised by Professor Booker and perhaps discussed with others, making it very clear what we are answering. So this isn't a general declaration of the code. We were asked by President's Court to do a specific task, and this is clarifying factually how that came to be and what we took up. Lines 15 through 26 are essentially no change. They're direct lifted from CJC R2 at the last meeting. Line 27 through 31, the first sentence, whereas at the Assembly's regular meeting of January 22nd, right here, that's just a factual add-in to the CJC resolution of what happened at the last meeting. The rest is from CJC R2. The result is an update. It is the University Assembly endorses the CJC's recommendation and declines to present a resolution modifying the campus code of conduct to address limited advance notice. We were asked to look at this by the president. We referred it as is appropriate to the CJC. The CJC says we looked at it. They looked at it, as you know, for several months, decided that this was not what they thought should happen in the code. You supported that recommendation at the last meeting, and this makes it just clear. We're declining to present a resolution modifying the code as he requested us to look into it. And then lines 36 to 40 are slightly reworded expression of appreciation to the Office of the Assemblies. There was some grammar and language things that were brought up by some members. And with that, I turn it over to Professor Wayne and or Joseph Friedman.
Yeah, so we spoke about this briefly at our last meeting. But yeah, I think Chairman Blair said it all. We were asked to consider including a recommendation for advance limited voluntary notice as the term has evolved. And we found that this was both not in the spirit or the type of structure of requests that we would put into the code. We thoroughly reviewed the code, specifically the articles concerning freedom of speech and freedom of protest on campus, and the restrictions that are placed on, you know, petitioning speakers that have been invited by the university on interfering with academic events. We thought that it would be prohibitive to spontaneous acts of free speech. It would be divisive to speech acts in a kind of ad hoc statutory manner. We decided to preserve the fidelity of the code. So we're refusing to act on that recommendation. After a long debate with folks like police chief Zoner, members of the EA, members of the UA, members of the SA.
Questions for Mr. Friedman, Professor Wayne, or others from the CJC who may be in attendance? Professor Booker.
I'll just give you my view. If you go online and actually look at a lot of progressive organizations in terms of editorials for this issue, they actually have almost the same language that 4.5 pages This is a linear laboratory. And, I mean, if you look at the results of the last protest on the campus, I mean, that was a strategic tactical error on part of the ordinance. And it's clear that they had just a little bit more thought in terms of defining their goals and aligning their actions with their goals, it'd be tough. The whole purpose of this university is to train great leaders. And leaders are not born, they're created. Okay? And we are just asked to make a recommendation that might just cause someone to pause and consider the benefits as well as the cost of having a permit. And it's amazing the language that we have here about a suggestion about whether or not you, Cornell student, is so out of it that you don't realize the difference between a recommendation and a rule. Because the whole tenet of the response is that this is too strict. That's all they're saying is too strict. So, you know, that's what they're saying. So if you go on and move up, that way you look at three sites randomly. MoveOn.org, some other organization. The first thing that they suggest, one was location, location, location. You may want to get permits if that's what your goal is required. And somehow here at Cornell, we're saying, oh, don't worry about that. Just go do whatever you want. Because we don't want to have any restrictions on your activities. We do. We want thoughtful, considered action. And we put thoughtful, considered action so that you stop and pull the limits of what you do. So, you know,
thank you. Other comments or questions, Professor Wayne?
I'd like to add to one. So the Cornell code of conduct, doesn't allow free speech, period. It allows free speech that's not this one. that's in the code. And then to enumerate what's disruptive and what isn't disruptive would be impossible. And we felt that it was the principle, free speech without disruption, and things that you can, if you disrupt, here's what's hurt you. But there's no recommendations in the code. It's not the spirit of the code to give recommendations. It's principles, and if you do this thing that's wrong, here's the wrong.
Thank you, Professor Wayne. Are there other questions, comments, statements? Gina?
I appreciate very, very much lines 36 through 40. I would respectfully request that those be stricken. I appreciate very much the sentiment. I just would be afraid that it might set a precedent that's unnecessary. This is what we do, and we're glad to do it, and we appreciate the appreciation, but I don't know that it's necessary in this particular resolution.
That was just included. That was the last line of the email in which I conveyed this resolution to the chairman.
Sure.
So,
we mean it, but stand by. We'll get that. Are there any other comments, questions? All right. So there is a amendment before you to strike lines 36 through 40. I would add to that in line 34, after the word notice, changing the comma to the period and striking out the word and. Are there any objections to adopting that amendment. Are there any questions as to what we're talking about? Lines 36 through 40, removing them from the resolution. Line 34, ending the notice, ending with the period, and striking the word "and." Are there any objections? Hearing none, that amendment is adopted. Are there any other comments or questions on UA Resolution 3 as amended? Hearing none, this issue is properly before the Assembly for a vote. It has been put out for approximately 7 days of public comment. None were received. We are not recommending a change to the actual code. The UA exec felt, therefore, we did not need to put it out for 3 to 4 weeks of actual comment. If there are no further objections, then I would like to bring discussion to a close and vote on UA Resolution 3. Are there any further comments or questions? Hearing none, discussion is closed. The matter is before you. All members with green placards, all those in favor of approving UA Resolution 3 as amended, please raise your placard. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I have 8-4. Those against. I have 1 against. Abstentions. As the chair, I abstain. The resolution carries. Thank you, Joseph. Thank you, Professor Wayne. All right. Resolution 3 now being properly disposed of. We're turning to the next item, the JCC update. The floor recognizes Amanda Menikas for 25 minutes. Ms. Menikas, the floor is yours. Do you need to connect up? Report to the podium. We will not count this against Ms. Menikas' 25 minutes.
Navigate whatever disciplinary process is applicable next slide. Okay, so the point of that is to kind of just paint a backdrop for everyone to understand that I've been in this job for a year and a half, or actually more than that now. My counterpart, Emily, who was unable to make it today, she's been in the job for a year, and she'll take over for me next year. We served 2 years there. And we're uniquely situated in our position as a player in all three of these codes to kind of observe not just how policy is necessarily written, but how it actually operates in practice, which, as you all know, often sometimes different in implementation. So over the past year and a half, we've been compiling concerns and observations that we've had as related to these disciplinary systems, and tried in our best efforts to provide feedback to the correct policy owners, the stakeholders, and key players. And we've had a lot of difficulty. So a lot of that is just because the primary purpose of our office is to help individuals who are accused. We're concerned with advocacy on the behalf of a member, an individual member of the Cornell community. And we are full-time students. So doing a lot of coordination and figuring out who owns the policy, you know, just mentioned recently, sometimes it's difficult to figure out how these processes happen. So it's hard to identify the person to whom you should submit feedback and then also to follow up. So recently, with the release of the Judicial Administrator's Annual Report, which came out, I think, on January 20th, that covered last academic year, we decided that we were going to issue our first-time office's response to that report. So essentially, we're going to cover all the cases that we've had in the last academic year, and we're also going to make observations regarding implementation for each of the three policies under which we operate, and recommendations for their improvement. Now, that might just be changing language, it might be adding a provision that we feel is missing, it might be, as Randy mentioned, promoting consistency between policies that reference, for example, the same interim measure, but they're slightly worded differently, and then that results in practice some inconsistency that's problematic. And in doing so, we hope to get the policy owners the information that they need to make improvements. Now, with that said, combine this issue with an overlay of a general problem I think we have here at Cornell, is that our policy is kind of located all over the place in a disjointed fashion. There is no centralized repository for, say, for example, all rights and responsibilities of students, so academic integrity, 6.4, and code of conduct in one place. And we often interface also with parents, and this is a big complaint for parents of students. They can't find the policy that they need, for example, house rules in the residence hall for their freshmen. So we were thinking, you know, wouldn't it be nice if, like a lot of other Ivy League institutions, we provide members of the community with just a book that puts all of this information in one place, maybe that's a PDF, maybe that's a hard copy bound notebook that's provided to you there by the Cornell, that outlines all of the different areas in which you are expected to behave in a certain way, and then also, if you do not, this is the process that you will face, and then what are your rights under those various processes. So essentially what we're talking about is, on the most basic level, the need to centralize these policies. And in doing so, we would be able to solve, or at least identify ownership, to provide feedback for a lot of the trending issues that we've seen. And I think this is extremely important, if you didn't come up here and just say, hey, we should centralize everything. But the reason I'm in front of you today is because I feel very passionately about this issue, because I've struggled deeply in my job to make meaningful change, because I couldn't figure out who was responsible. And some examples, I know that Dean Burns isn't here, but I worked with him last year. Last year I had a case of a student, and I'm just going to do kind of like redacted facts, because this is the type of thing that can happen when a policy is unclear and the mechanism for changing it is also unclear. We had a student who, under the Code of Academic Integrity, there's a procedural timeline, for example. It lays out the time that a professor has following a primary hearing to decide and make a decision of whether or not a student is cheated, for example, or not. And then it lies out a procedural timeline for the board to hear the board to convene. But it doesn't say, and this is an example of a gap in language, how much time a professor may take before receiving notice of a potential violation and convening that primary hearing. We had a case last year of a first semester senior who had a pending case for over a year and a half because the professor had failed to bring a primary hearing. Now, various reasons for that, but as you can imagine, having an incomplete on your transcript really affects your life, your ability to get internships, employment, and it was simply an unreasonable period of time. It took our office a long time to figure out the faculty senate was the correct place to go to provide that feedback, and then also the meeting of the ECP. It was difficult to identify ownership just to brief this issue, and it took us over about, you know, six an additional year to make this change. And again, our office is responsible for advocating on behalf of individuals. As much as I love and am passionate about influencing policy, I feel like there should be a place where I can go as a concerned member of the Cornell community with an issue, especially a trending issue, and have that body or authority or entity be responsible for coordinating with the key players on campus to implement change. And we don't have that right now. And I think this goes to what you mentioned earlier about pertaining to, you know, student healthy. Where are these decisions being made? Who's responsible and how can we get involved? So, additionally, in relation to parallel policies, I know Randy mentioned that, there was language that appeared in the Code of Conduct for 6.4. I believe the intent was to make it the same thing, but in practice it was not, and therefore we have two different standards for implementation. I'm not going to go too much into detail. Another thing that we often comes to our office is trending issues that are not within our jurisdiction of Cornell, but perhaps out in College Town, landlord tenant issues. There was a litany of requests we had last year regarding fines for trash outside of fraternity and sorority annexes. And that's not something our office handles, but this is where the student assembly kind of came in, because we were talking about the issue of students needing information on how to get real legal assistance. How do I go get an attorney out in town? And if I do, is there a way for someone to help me pay for it? So although this doesn't pertain directly to student rights or members of the Cornell community rights under Cornell policy, it does affect members of our community, and often in great numbers. So this would be another place where feedback and observations like that could be submitted, and there could be an official capacity, someone responsible for performing liaison with City of Ithaca and answering questions or helping people get legal assistance. Another key issue, so we get most of our violations that come into our office fall under the realm of the Code of Conduct, and most of those are from CPD tickets on campus. There was a lot of questions last year that arose because we had about 25-ish tickets over the period of 2 months regarding CPD officers searching rooms in the residence hall. There was definitely clear consent. Other times we had situations in which students were either asleep or in class, and the RA opens the room on behalf of the student and allows CPD to enter the room. Now, is that okay? It might be. In the context of a private university where you have a housing contract, that might be, you might have a reduced expectation of privacy in the sense that this kind of practice is acceptable. I would argue that it is not. The housing contract, we went there first, it was silent on this issue, could not get a clear answer at all from university council or from CP. They both said, ask the other one. I mean, everyone is in good faith trying to find a solution, don't get me wrong. But we still don't have a clear answer on that issue. And unfortunately, like I said before, as much as I want an answer and I want to defend students and protect them, I have a full sense to myself, I don't have a place to go with this issue so that the answer can be ascertained and then policy can be improved to reflect it. Another issue that Sarah brought up was Good Samaritan. This policy exists to kind of protect students that call law enforcement and one of their friends is ingested usually too much drugs or alcohol, and they're supposed to, the language is a little vague, but it appears as though you can receive kind of amnesty for your own misconduct if you call for a health reason. But this policy has been inconsistently applied and it's often misleading, and students have a lot of questions about it, particularly within the context of frequent. So these are just an example of all the different kind of fears that all are related to the behavior of members of Cornell community and what is expected of them, and then also what their rights are when they violate those expectations. So I know it wouldn't solve everything, but having this all in one place would be very helpful. And in the first instance, it would not alter in any way, shape, or form the ownership of these policies, but it would provide more transparency, greater awareness, and if all of these things were compiled in one place, then it would kind of be greater accountability, I believe. For example, if we were to submit something to the Faculty Senate in regards to academic integrity, and on an annual basis, the updated academic integrity code was compiled into this handbook of rights and responsibilities, more people would be looking at it and say, hey, was that change made? Oh, no, it wasn't. Okay, well, then we need to re-put that on the agenda for this year. So it's just greater awareness. I think that's always a good thing. Next one. Actually, that's pretty much I've already talked about all this. But additionally, that entity that would be responsible for the collection of those policies, like I said before, with greater awareness, they could be the feedback mechanism versus receiving recommendations and then kind of holding people accountable for making them. Also, like I said, legal advice to students fall under this. And then further, when we got this idea, I was looking around how other schools do this, and like I said, a lot of schools publish a single document that's rights and responsibilities. Often it's prefaced by a preamble that is either a student rights, a very general short list of student rights, or a members of the university community rights, which can merely be extrapolated from all the various policies. It doesn't necessarily require that anything new is approved, but it would be put into one document on a single page in front of all of those. Also, and this is probably the most controversial thing that I'm going to say today, because I know no one likes to cede power and control to other organizations or groups, but over time, I think that if, for example, the CJC, let's just say hypothetically, was in charge of receiving the documents from the policy owners, compiling them, and then publishing them in some form with this bill of student rights or rights of the community on an annual basis, their oversight of those policies could eventually increase to promote consistency between language, between different policies, and then in turn, in time, if we wanted to give them more power, we could. And I think that that's looking very far ahead in 2 years. But oftentimes centralizing a mechanism for making changes is a good thing. Next slide. So that's pretty much me. That was everything. So we're going to make this a joint presentation.
Questions would be at the end, Brandy.
So right now we're kind of at the phase in the process where we're trying to talk about what this would look like in the long term. But just to clarify, as of right now, before we get too ahead of ourselves, we're looking to you guys to try to help us figure out a good place or a good group of people that could potentially take on this task of, compiling all of the rights and responsibilities in one place. So I'm going to talk about what the rights and responsibilities book would look like, but ultimately our goal in coming together is to try to find another group to work on that. So it'd be great if not just students, but all members of the Cornell community could have this Bill of Rights, along with the Code of Conduct, Academic Integrity Policies, other policies including 6.4, their rules of their residential halls, and additional appendices that would aid students or not students when they get into issues that are maybe not directly applicable to everyone. So it could have some helpful information about what your rights are with a CBD officer. We talked a lot with Amanda about how CBD officers tend to wear two hats on the private university and at a state after. So students get confused and they don't know that when they're on campus, they have to give their ID, their Cornell ID, to an officer or not. But students also don't know what their rights are with UPD officers or maybe even IPD officers if they're in Cornell-owned property or not. So there could be appendices to this book that explain to students really clearly, if you're asked for your ID on campus, this is what, by an officer, these are your rights. If you're in a situation where X happens, you are allowed to do this under Cornell policy and under the law. And that will really help students out in the long run, I think. And also there could be additional things about your rights as an employee of the university, because we have our employee assembly, our faculty, which are technically employed by the university, as well as students who serve as employees of the university. So this could just provide additional information for them. So
that's basically a refresh.
Yeah, that's basically a refresh. But to, to kind of clarify a little bit more, the preamble wouldn't be very long or very detailed. This committee would be, in front of coming up with the bill itself, would be more codified positive language. The problem that we're seeing here, I think, or at least part of it, is that there's a lot of things about what you can't do. There's not a lot of stuff about what you can do. So when students end up in these university disciplinary processes, they don't necessarily know what it's supposed to look like. They just know that they did something wrong. And that's confusing for students and for parents. And, you know, we would just extrapolate these things from policy that already exists just to clarify so students understand what their rights are.
Yeah, to build off what Sarah said, obviously that would go through all the various mechanisms to make sure the language is correct in council and whatnot. And also just to reemphasize that a lot of this is taking what already exists and putting it in one place. So all these documents already exist that students have maybe in one place or another, members of the Cornell community have, but they don't have it in this one centralized location. And another thing that we talked about was that a lot of times students will call into the JCC and they'll be saying, you know, I can't find this online, I can't find this, everything's really decentralized. So this is also something for people that are outside of being physically on our campus to be able to understand what is actually available for
us. Point of order. How many more slides do you think you have? We're
only been going for 17 minutes.
Yeah, I'm worried about questions.
Okay,
reserving time for questions.
Okay, so this is basically, I'm going to summarize this really quick. Basically, the Student Assembly has actually tried to bring forward a committee on the Bill of Rights and a specific Bill of Rights before in the past, like, 15 years or so. And even if it has gone through the proper modes of action, it's kind of fallen off the wayside, whether that's because students graduated. At one point, it was referred to the UA, and the UA kind of dropped it. That was several years ago. But the point is, we want to work with all the constituent assemblies, with all appropriate groups on campus, to establish a group that will be looking out for the rights of Cornell community members and ensuring that the people who enact the policies at Cornell are held accountable for enacting them.
All right, for questions, Mr. Battaglia.
Thank you very much for bringing this before us.
And may I interrupt, please limit your questions, if you can, to a minute or less.
Of course. Thank you, Jim. Thank you again for bringing this before us. I think it's very important because many times we focus on adding new rights, new privileges to things. You focus on really expanding things. But at the same token, it's almost as important, if not more important, to ensure that the rights and privileges we already have are enforced. Because adding new rights to things that aren't being enforced isn't really doing much. I think this is really what this touches at, because it's critical that what we have be enforced before we start looking to expand it. So, thank you.
Professor Booker.
Have you guys thought about changing the security code and the code of conduct for policy? If you actually simplify things in the industry, I mean, if you think about it, that all those activities are part of the one umbrella, which is very clear as well.
So our office has looked extensively at all of the other IE disciplinary systems, both general misconduct and then specifically within the classroom. And a lot, Princeton does do it that way. Several schools have one process. If you mess up, whether it's plagiarism or underage drinking, you're going to go through this process. The only difference is that the panel is the composition varies based on the focus. So it's an academic related issue than professors from that college did on it or whatever. There's a way to get. Other schools, it's even more decentralized than Cornell. So not only do they have a separate, right now at Cornell, there's one academic integrity policy, but it's implemented differently or within each college in its own way, or its own department in their own way. Other schools also do that with code of conduct. So they have an overarching code of conduct, but every single college does that differently. And I mean, that's just, it's quite a mess. But personally, speaking as from Amanda's perspective, I am a proponent of consolidating these into one process and allowing there to still be influence from the players that know best. Obviously, the faculty would be more involved with what's on the panel for an academic integrity case or hearing. But then it's consistent. Right now, the state of affairs is that you can do the same thing in arts and sciences and in Cal, and results. These two completely different outcomes and different sanctions, essentially. Like, one could have a permit to change your transcript while the other college would do it that way. And I think that's unfair. So,
thank you. Professor Wayne?
Are you thinking of a paper book?
So, the actual, like, vehicle for it, a lot of schools have it in a PDF format online, but I think we were thinking this is something that could be made available in print, and hence,
and during, at least with orientation, you already get the code, you get the academic integrity, so they are already allocated resources for this through orientation.
Yeah. You don't
get the policy 6.4.
You do not get
it's a nightmare to read. I mean, it's, you don't want to commit a crime every day. You can put it out. But what Lynette is thinking of doing is making an online version that if you're a student and this is what happens, then you click here and it just shortens it out. And
pretty short already.
It's 41 pages.
I mean, those, I'm going to talk about the little flow charts if you want to look at like
thank you,
Miss. Anyhow, online may be useful if you're a student.
Miss
Beth?
Yeah, thanks for your question. I think your idea streamline things sounds really great. I have no experience with accessing any of this information, but I think if you can't find it, students can't find it, then that's a good idea. I just have a question that's maybe constructive about suggesting that there be another body or organization to be in charge. It sounds like the role of the JCC is to do this, to represent going on community members, so do you think maybe you just need to be a better resource, or do you need a different organization?
So I would respond to that because this is something that we kind of looked at. I think it's actually inappropriate for us to be responsible because we are interested in the sense that we are clearly defense. Similarly, mm-hmm. the JAA is kind of like a campus prosecutor to mm-hmm. balance one another. Perfect. And so I think that it would be better suited to be that we should both have input, but we should not either of us.
Right, so maybe the committee would have a representative from the JCC office on the committee. There would be students, faculty, employees, kind of like how our constituent assemblies work. There would be all the key players in on these meetings. The difference would be that these people would have the direct line of contact with people who own these policies so that these changes can actually be made. Because at least, even as a student, I have no idea where a lot of these policies would have come from, or if I wanted to talk about what to edit in one of them, other than the CJC, which I sit on the field for the code, I don't even know where to go, and I know where most things are. And there's mm-hmm. a definite need for a group to address this.
Mr. Walworth, did you have a question?
Well, it's sort of a question more for you, but do you think it would be appropriate to maybe a solution to that is to formally take the college primary responsibility and codify it in some way, maybe through bylaws or charter, that they would be responsible for consolidating policy in this way.
I don't know for other reasons, which we don't have time for now. I don't know what to recommend about that. There are some things that they might be able to do. Other things that become pretty dicey because of CJC turnover, and I think the CJC would have to be restructured a little bit in the bylaws. In other words, it's possible. I'm not sure that there are better solutions yet. So let me, in that vein, say that the UA exec will follow up discussions with the principals here and come to you, or they may propose, but we'll come to you with some recommendations before the end of term. We're 60, 70 days before our session meaningfully ends, and so we're handicapped by that as well. Very quickly, Mr. Fridman.
Yeah, two really quick points. I highly recommend that the CJC, which I'm a member of, and member of there's a member of, pass something that is codified. We're just not equipped with the type of knowledge and the type of powers to assess such a thing that regularly based on our assembly, as Jim mentioned. The second thing I'd mention is that it seems that the university is exposing itself to an awful lot of risk by not having formal oversight of its police, like not knowing, like them not knowing whether or not they're allowed to enter students' rooms and things like that. Are there other types of liability that the university is incurring by not providing a student bill of rights in this way?
And not providing,
Ithaca has a community, has a civilian complaint board. I think every city has a civilian police complaint board or oversight board.
So there is a civilian, I wish Captain Jensen was here, but there is a civilian complaint mechanism that exists within DC. You can file a complaint. However, in terms of education on what officers can and cannot do on campus, there is a lot of confusion. University councils, I mean, I've talked to all the key players on that one specific issue, and there was a lot of uncertainty. And basically, the answer I got was, until somebody sues, we're not going to figure it out. So,
we're about out of time. Last question, Ms. Giambattista.
There are two quick questions. The first is, it essentially, to me, it sounds like it's two different things. One is you're looking for a portal for information, and then secondly, you want to align all the existing policies and components. Can you do one without the other? And I would suggest that all these policies and codes already exist right now. Perhaps one of the assembly's websites, if you're looking for a place to direct people, we can build a landing page. There are existing places we can put this information. The bigger and longer term issue, I think this body has several committees, which I think Jim just pointed out. You don't need to reconvene anybody. The Campus Welfare Committee may be appropriate, the CJC. The persistence of moving this forward, though, will fall to staff. And so that's a component I just want to bring forward, that the reason why it probably hasn't gone anywhere is, as you mentioned, students graduate. I'm not so sure that, and I don't know the answer, if faculty find this as essential as perhaps students or even staff. So taking that in consideration, I would just ask you to keep, you know, if that's a component of it, make sure you interact well with the employee assembly if that's of interest.
Thank you. We are out of time. Members who may still have questions, please send them to the chair. We will forward them to the principals and get you answers. The UA exec will take this up and see if we have some meaningful way to move this forward and bring it back to you at a future meeting.
Is there any way I can motion to extend?
As a member, yes, you can motion to extend. I will, before anyone second, say that if we do that, we will need to extend the meeting.
All right, I'm just going to ask for like 5 more minutes.
There's a motion to extend for 5 minutes. Is there a second? There is a second. Are there any objections?
May I ask why?
I'd like to respond to Dina's, I think, point
that she made. Withdrawn.
All right. Hearing no objections, you're extended 5 minutes. Please carry on.
So there were three things that were all very beautifully said that I would like to respond to. The first of which, I think that formally when this went through, the Student Bill of Rights had a few controversial provisions. Very specific issues, and this document we're talking about, which is, you know, will be much more general and extrapolate from the existing policy. It will be much less controversial. We're trying to take baby steps forward. We know we cannot change the world overnight. The other question, the thing that you mentioned was, one, compiling all of this in one place versus actually influencing change and
keeping them separate.
So I think that right now the priority is to address the first issue. First, let's get everything together and make someone responsible for it. Maybe in years to come, if that body, wherever it sits, with the workplace folks or with CJC, they can increase their authority over that or their coordination. There's potential for growth. I think that right now we're just trying to get them all together. I think those are two separate issues. And what was the first thing you said? That was great. That's all right. I think this is equally important for students. I mean, I think their students comprise the majority of Cornell community here on campus, and so may be affected by a lot of these policies in a different way. For example, if a faculty member doesn't need to worry about the house rules in the residence hall, so that particular chapter of this book would only, by its jurisdictional nature, affect students. However, there's a lot of things that...
I think it's mostly important to students. I was just saying that the curation of it would probably fall to staff. Just because of the constant rotation and of the students coming in and out, that the persistence of this particular document or portal or whatever it is,
right,
needs a place.
That's why it's so important that we have on this group. We have people like Lynette, like the people who own all of these policies, in the same room, so that the staff can carry it accurately and promptly. Or if they're not in the room, that those policy owners submit to the center. And the other thing I would say is we looked at two kind of different courses of action we were brainstorming. One was creating something new, a group of people drawn from different areas that would be responsible for owning this, and then also putting it somewhere in an existing contract. So So I think a lot of these problems result from bureaucracy, and sometimes creating more bureaucracy solves bureaucracy is not a good thing. I mean, that's like basic admin law. So I think that if we can leverage what we already have and empower something, starting small, for example, with the CJC and saying, we're just going to give an additional responsibility for the next academic year that all policies will be just submitted to the single point of contact for the purpose of compilation and publishing in a PDF, like, that would be great. And then from there, you just forward, we can build on it.
For follow-on, Ms. Giambattista.
I was just going to say, I think, and I'm happy to brainstorm to be helpful about ideas on how to accomplish what you're doing. Again, I think that all of these policies exist locally. What you're trying to find is a centralized home for them all. Thanks, Ned. And the oversight will remain local. And you know, we did this with an events planning site. You know, everybody owns their local policies, but we just need one place where anybody can find what they're looking for. And the curators of that do nothing content-wise. All of the content exists locally. So, and that's the one component of what you're talking about. The other is changing it all and aligning it and really working to make sure that you know, everybody is in alignment. But if you're, what you're looking for is a place where people can go so they know what they're responsible for, I think that there's very little bureaucracy needed, just some resources.
I think that's our goal right now, is to do the repository. I think that, however, giving ownership of that repository to an agency, even if they're just a passive recipient, I think that allows the foundation for, in the future, there to be greater authority kind of delegated to that entity, whatever it is, and then to promote transparency and accountability. Because if you're just posting your stuff online and uploading something passively, like, CJC is not going to go over and read the academic integrity policy.
That's right.
It actually gets people in the room together at least once a year to kind of review everything.
I really think this is an attempt to empower the shared governance system, and I think by placing this under the CJC, we give them a lot of thought to trust us. We've gone through every single permutation of how this could work. This is a way to start, and this is a way to put it under governance within the shared governance system. We always talk about empowering it and giving it more breath and giving it more expansion. This is a way to start that process and really think about the CJC in more ways than it currently is.
Thank you very much. And again, we'll carry this on, and you can see there's some interested people who will probably contact you.
Yeah, please contact us if you have ideas regarding concern and that we're going to move forward maybe too quickly. And we want to get everyone's input before we make any decisions.
As I bring this up, I ask for members' consent to extend the meeting for 10 minutes. I believe we can finish out what we have left in that amount of time of thereabouts. But I hear a second. I'm ignoring anybody who dissents. Not really, that wasn't it. Because of the subject matter, Mr. Battaglia has recommended bringing his introduction of University Resolution R4 before the recapitulation of updates without objection. Let's just do the introduction to R4.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman Blair. I am passing out a copy of University Assembly Resolution 4, providing for our faculty advisor to the Office of the Judicial Jones Counselor. I'm sure Amanda will have an introduction for it.
Sure. So, as I mentioned previously, the JCC office, we're just four law students. There's two of us that are third year and two that are second year. We would like to have a faculty advisor named. We have a couple of professors that we go to regularly to review our appeals, and since we have legal questions and we're trying to figure out legal strategy. And it would be nice, you know, just on a personal level, it's kind of tough to bother someone and knocking on their door all the time. It'd be nice to be able to give that title officially to a volunteering faculty member who would like to be our official advisor. And that's pretty much what this proposal is for. We've already socialized this with the president's office and with the dean of the law school, and they're supportive. So,
I think this is important because, as I said earlier,
A lot of things we look at are forward changing, let's add rights, let's consolidate them. This is a very simple resolution that's aiming to ensure the rights and privileges that the Cornell community already has are actively enforced and upheld by adequately giving the resources to an office that is tasked with doing so. This is why I think it's important that the Assembly voice its support for this and ensure that the JCC is able to do its job with the best ability possible.
And it's free.
It would
open the umbrella of confidentiality to share with that.
That's probably the most important part of it.
Yes.
For clarification, remember, this is an introduction of Resolution 4. We will not vote on it tonight. It will be forwarded to you electronically. We will vote at it in the next meeting unless there is an objection from the floor to do so. Any more presentation? Okay. Questions?
Question. Would this faculty advisor have any oversight? Right now, as I understand it, the Judicial Codes Counselors are employed through the Office of the President.
Yes.
So would the faculty advisor have any sort of employment oversight?
In terms of employment, I'm sorry.
Well, I'm just not quite sure. Right now, your authority comes through the Office of the President. Is that right?
Oh, you mean in terms of who gets employed in our office? Mm-hmm. This advisor would be involved. I don't understand what you mean. How would you call employment oversight?
Who's supervising you?
No one. The President is supervising us.
And so the faculty advisor advises just as a from a legal perspective?
In matters concerning our cases, exactly. And then perhaps could be invited to participate in the JCC search committee. I don't imagine it have any greater authority, in terms of this individual being our supervisor. That would not be the case. It would still be the JCC, as written in the code of conduct, is the head of the office. It would just be nice to have a real attorney to turn to for mentorship and assistance on that.
Recognizing myself for a comment. For instance, we have a disagreement about something. We don't know where to turn. Advise us with your experience. Who should I talk to? Or you know, some of the issues we've talked before. You know, where should we look? Is there somebody, you know, tapping into that? Literally an advisor to their office.
Sure.
Mr. Walden.
I might just suggest that it might be a good idea to include language that would specify that the advisor is really just for advice. Current as a graduate student, I think that's the advisor I think of law, so I should have it for
me.
If I was ever to be my faculty advisor for this subject too, so I think that you might want to clarify that this is not someone who has direct authority over the student. If that's
good. But you know, one thing that helps clarify this, I mean, really what you want that umbrella, in terms of material. They can actually have legal access to it. That's really important. That's not really what you need. Because anyone could advise you, but the reality is you want that individual to have access to critical information. And that's really key. That's really valuable.
Okay. Professor Wayne.
I would like to add to line 34, for you to resolve that Kevin Clearmont be named the first advisor to the JCC office.
It would be in our purview to do that, but I think it would be rather presumptuous of us to do something that really should be, in my opinion, left to the dean of the law school.
Kevin Clearmark actually wrote the code.
He did.
One thing that you may want to consider is that a tenured faculty member, and you really want to take tenure track, because that means the person has that access, and that may not be the issue.
The issue with that, and I added that word in the drafting process, which was short and sweet, was so that anybody involved in this process, because of what it involves, could not be subject to any intimidation whatsoever by any part of the process. Okay. So tenure track, you understand the distinction. So, and I'm sure they have plenty. It may not be vital. I put that word in there for exactly the reasons of. If anybody's touching the judicial process, right now Cornell, I think, is by and large a very good partnership. If there ever were a, you don't want anybody, this is another benefit of having a faculty advisor, somebody go, now wait a minute. You know, before I let the JCC answer into that,
you know, I'm going to step in front of that.
Richard, really quickly, and actually, if you don't mind, I see the point completely, but the reason I wasn't concerned about it, and I could be completely wrong, is in the code of conduct, because the judicial code counselor is the position that is nominated and appointed by the president, I don't feel like the term an advisor could even for the code have authority over the JCC. I'm not sure if that's right. Correct. If you go back to the code, the advisor is not going to be mentioned in the JCC, in the language.
The legal issue when all the informed parties should know what's going on. There should be no
right.
Ladies and gentlemen, I need to bring this item to a close. We will bring this resolution forward, probably amended within, say, the next 2 weeks.
Sure.
Perhaps to talk about exactly what we mean by advisor. We can discuss it, add or delete words like tenure or other suggestions. If anybody here has recommendations for changes for this resolution, this draft resolution, please get them to Mr. Battaglia. He will work them with Ms. Meninkas and others. And 2 weeks from now, we'll put a article revised out there, which would be our intent to then publicize and potentially vote at our next meeting. Are there any other general questions regarding the introduction of ARPA? Hearing none, when we go to the next added item, okay, very briefly, at the beginning in September of this year, we reviewed and dispatched to the different committees. The different things that we wanted to achieve this year as an assembly. I have put before members a slide set. This is a repeat of those items for the next four slides. The first is to the UA exec. One was the modern establishment of a task force in use of outdoor space. That task force has been created. I have been designated the chair. Our report is due out in mid-March, and we appear that we are going to make that deadline. Coordinate with the Office of the President to receive the presentation on the President's Annual Sustainability Report. We have received that report in writing. It has been forwarded to members. We are invited to the Sustainability Summit, and Dan Brock came and presented their recommendations to us. Coordinate with CUPD to update the Assembly on the Clarity Act. The Chief Zoner has done that. Coordinate with the Judicial Administrator on an annual update of disciplinary trends. Coordinate with the Ombudsman. These two presentations are still pending. We have not had the JA. We have not had the Ombudsman this session. And then work with standing committees to talk to cadet, child care, diversity council. We did do sustainability, master plan, and I'll come forward on where we are in that in a minute. Infrastructure committee. Ned, can you remind me on TCAC funding issues?
It's still outstanding. I sent an email to Bridget, and she is going to call a meeting of the task force soon. They're waiting on more information. There's no more information for that.
Is there any issue with students getting free bus passes for next year? First term, current policy continuing on?
She did not indicate any change.
Okay.
There was no information, so there's no change.
All right. Carbon neutrality by 2035. The president has clarified quite forcefully that the timeline has been moved up to 2035. There is no resolution needed. The plan is adequate and was very thorough. We don't know yet how the universe is really going to carry out implementation, but President Sporkin has backed bringing it up and the tax.
One way to actually do that is to try to see if there's a way to establish a benchmark. Because it's going to happen if this is a long-term plan. In 2 or 3 years, you may not realize that we're supposed to place the power plant in the XYZ because of the change in the world. But on the other hand, you could actually have a set of benchmarks that are fine, you know, with each one of the dates
time stamp, that might actually help, because all you have to do at that point is look back at the end of the year and know, was that done? And if it is, check. If it wasn't done, then that gives you future members of the board a chance to actually have some of that easy follow.
I agree with you. The sustainability office does have a very complex set of things they're following, and I think they're going to build in the next year, although we can't guarantee it because Dan Roth has moved on, his replacement has moved up, and we have to see how that actually flows. But a set of stoplight charts that indicate where they think the Cornell community is, and the president does have to publish his annual report, which we will continue, or we will recommend future assemblies continue to review. Hopefully they will follow that advice. We do need to hear from the campus planner on the next few years' implementations of the campus plan, plus any parking increases that they have proposed perhaps for next year. Welfare committee. So the first one, the presentation on the open access policy, we had Professor Schaffer come and speak with us, and I think that's going slower than we hoped, but there was nothing he proposed that we needed to do on their behalf. So we'll put this in our final report and ask the next assembly to continue to follow up on it, and it will be up to them whether they do. Follow up with university diversity officers. We want to hold the diversity panel and review campus climate like we did last year, continue to make sure that we're moving forward in that regard. We have not been able to schedule that panel yet. Coordinate with an update. Okay, this is the same thing on the EDOs, if they're related.
May I interject? I just want everybody to be aware that the second bullet, so that your constituency members know, if you go to the diversity website, it's there. So anybody that wants to come see what's planned for all units for the year. So very thorough. Yeah.
And it is good. We hope to have Jeanette here today. I apologize, that's my fault. I have a plan of reconnecting, I'll share in a moment. Child care programs, we also wanted to reconnect in here because it's been since 2010 or 11, the last time we heard satisfaction surveys. I'm told that the results are good, but it hasn't been presented to us. And it'd be good to hear a success story as well as all the things that people are frustrated about. Codes of Judicial, Randy Wingsus, we've done our homework. He was like, ka-ching. So, next formal meeting, March 24th, we have President Scorton. It will be his final before us. If you have issues for him, please send them to me. It is his farewell address. He's not going to implement new policy. Anything we send to him, he's going to say thank you, and if it's meaningful, he will refer it, I'm sure, to President Garrett. But at this point, I don't expect him to send any shocking signals at that meeting. And so, focus your questions appropriately. I mean, if you really got some itch that you want scratched, I would like to send it to him in advance so that it can be as smoothly handled as possible. The campus planner may be able to meet with us the 24th. This would be, you know, what buildings and construction and things are going to happen in the next 2 years, they hope, plus parking changes and fee changes. I would like to recoup in that health update. I think we need to get through the rest of this struggle with the student health fee. So Vice President Murphy, who really, really, really was trying to step off a plane and get right here with her luggage in hand, but it just got to be too hard. And I really want to compliment her willingness to put that level of effort to try and be here. It couldn't be helped, and it was not her fault. A short, sweet daycare update. Campus climate, we want to have the UDOs in, or the University Diversity Council, some members in. We do need to have the JA and Ombudsman update. Discussion on potential charter bylaw change. There could be some campus plan changes, but I also have a set of recommendations that I think would help us or help future assemblies. For instance, we turn to pumpkins July 1. That timing doesn't work very well. In fact, we can't get all the members, not all the elections and appointments for the next assembly are done by July 1, and yet they're picking officers when they don't even have a fully constituted assembly. There's some timing disconnects. We have attendance policies that were, for instance, you know, the chair of the FA, the dean of faculty are members. If they're not attending our meetings, well, our policy says we can talk to them, but they're appointed by position. They're not. So there's some rough edges that I think there's some common sense solutions to that I would like to put before you. I think many of those recommendations would resonate with you, maybe not all, so there needs to be a discussion. But it's something we could attempt to do this session. I know that the divestment is coming, I mean, it's being discussed. I don't know whether a resolution to revisit that will come forward. I do will tell you that if it is going to be brought forward, I'm going to want to, once again, make sure that the university gets to present a counterpoint of view to go along with what I would present, what I would expect, not to presage, a request to divest. So, fair and balanced. We are 70 days to turning into pumpkins, that's how I phrase it. So, do work quickly, else we really run out of time to do it properly and fairly to the university. We're not sure whether we have some follow-up PCAT issues. That really looks like it's moving forward constructively, but there's still a lot of, we have a meeting to hold. The results yet aren't yet published. The people who we're talking to are giving us very good signs. They seem to be very happy with the progress, but we do not know the details, nor would we expect to know some of those details publicly, although we do have people like Ned who are involved as an insider in that process. The appointment of the 2016 JCC would normally hit our agenda in April. To my knowledge, a search committee for the JA and Ombudsman have not been constituted. Therefore, I'm presuming that President Skorton, via President Garrett, intends to reappoint them. This is the year they get reappointed. We do have to confirm that nomination. Again, we would normally see those in April. We've never not confirmed them, but I have to build in time in case people do want to discuss the nomination or do have questions, and so, you know, could be 3 minutes, could be longer, but that is a must do before we resolve. We always do an annual resolution of appreciation. I'll type it up, but everybody who comes before and talks to us and helps us, we always say thank you to. And the resolution of what I'm calling at the moment continuity. Because there's a change of presidency, because we're going to have items open at the end of the year, I'm looking to do a resolution that formally connects where we leave it to the next assembly of what we recommend they pick up. There is no real mechanism for we just anything we don't finish dies. That, to me, I think I'm looking for something a little more formal to say, here's a resolution from the now deceased assembly to the now constituted assembly saying, these are things we hope you will take up, obviously to you, but they won't go, oh, I didn't know. You know, some new person wouldn't have known where we left it, maybe. So that presentation is a long way of getting to this. Go ahead, Professor Lynn.
Do we also have to confirm the new hearing and review board members?
Yes, but that typically happens over the summer. I don't know. The process has worked through the offices and assemblies.
I think we just, because it was new to me last year, it was late, but typically it is in the spring.
Yeah, I think that process needs to occur.
Have we been getting that? Oh, I don't think it's open yet. We can talk offline.
Yeah, so yes, that process needs to occur, but that is typically something, the actual approval of the university assembly is almost universally happens over the summer by the UA exec, and then briefed at the first meeting the next time, but the process and the interviews and the review of the work does need to happen before, you know, the resolution sometimes goes into the summer, but the actual vetting of people needs to occur while there are bodies, fully representative bodies, to include students involved in that process. Yes. So, you saw that list of people who we need to hear 15 to 25 minutes from. It's a lengthy list. We have two meetings left. March 24th, April 24th-ish, and then there's not a formal meeting, but the elections meeting would happen in early May, as currently constituted. This is typical that we need to go into two-meeting mode. March 10th and April 7th are, you know, 2 weeks out, two Tuesdays. They are formally backup meetings for us. They're currently standing committee dates. And what I'm recommending to you is if you believe we need to hear from the JA, the Ombudsman, the Diversity Council, we need to pick up some conversations with Vice President Murphy and Melina on student health fees and those kinds of things. I don't have the meeting minutes to do it. So if you still want to complete that agenda, either we're going to have very long meetings on the two we have left, meaning maybe an extra hour or more in each of those meetings, and we need to pick up our backup meetings. And I'm recommending we pick up our backup meetings. This impacts the standing committees. They would either need to reschedule or move. Professor Wayne.
I think we could knock off March 10th here because we have a meeting already set up to talk about what the other is doing.
Go ahead.
To
add a couple of the speakers that have been talking about having come here are already going to the individual assemblies, and I know that it's nice that we all come together in this group because we're all hearing these presentations. Definitely, anyway, there's no reason for you to have a meeting where we have to listen to some presentations again. So maybe we could just have the April 7th meeting have some newer and fresh.
Who are you talking about? Well, I know for
so what I'm hearing for some members is they don't want to cancel or they don't want to create the March 10th meeting. They are willing to create the April 7th meeting and put some of these agenda items on there. Things like reconnecting with Gannett, things like connecting with the Cornell Daycare. We can send a delegation to those people offline, meet with them, ask targeted questions, and bring back an assessment of things are going well or not. And we need more information or not. I mean, so there are ways outside of meetings to carry out some of this agenda. We don't typically do that because of transparency and open and public forum meetings, and sometimes people come to our meetings and tell us stuff that we didn't know. So, but there are more ways to accomplish this. So I'm asking for your guidance. I'm hearing two objections. What do the rest of you think is intended?
I think we should have the additional two meetings. The sheer fact that it's sending a delegation offline removes transparency, and it's something that we are constantly in these. I sit ex officio in the student assembly. The student assembly is constantly speaking about we want to increase transparency, and I think sending committees offline is a step to increasing opacity in the exact opposite. I think it's important to have these meetings because if they fall in our purview and they're going to speak to us, we don't know who could come. Our meetings are open. We could receive new points of information. Additionally, certain presentations are tailored based on the assembly content, and because of that, simply saying that, oh, I saw the student assembly version of this, or I saw the faculty senate version of this, I think the university assembly, A, has a very legitimate interest in hearing them as the main body meeting, having them on the record, and that we can ask more poignant questions that transcend interests of one assembly, one constituency, and going above to the campus community as a whole. So I firmly believe we should hold both meetings.
That's exactly my point. Like, we saw D.C. Murphy's presentation at the graduate professional community, but my department pays my health insurance. I don't care about the health fee. You know, and most graduate students, it's the same situation, but I'm the chair of the DWC. I have no idea what the students, who it actually affects how they feel about it. So I think it's important.
So let
together.
Me put it to you now. Have I your direction to constitute the April 7th meeting for purposes of a regular meeting of the University Assembly? Are there any objections? Hearing none, April 7th will be added to the schedule. March 10th, I've heard some objections. Are there further discussion about March 10th?
Motion to add it to the meeting to the regular list of meetings.
That motion to add March 10th, well, it's already before you, but thank you for the process. All in favor of adding March 10th to the regular meeting schedule, raise your hand, placard, whatever. I see 1, 2, 3. I see a lot of...
Raise them high. Raise them high so that our clerks can count you guys.
You really don't have much choice.
No, not without you telling us that I... Well, if you tell me to add one and not the other, I'll build a plan. I'll have to send some... counter options that I think are less ideal to you, and the UA exec will do the best we can with the time we have. may have to try and push meetings to 6:30. So there are ways to do this, but it gets to be very tight, and I get concerned about the resolution I don't know of, or the TCAT issue that really hasn't burned us this year. but
I mean, the House team, they don't hold that.
Yeah.
And that's important to you guys. When the issue becomes, do you really want the UA to have the time
I think everybody understands the issue. Let me come back, because we're mid-vote and we probably shouldn't continue the discussion, but all in favor of adding March 10th to the regular meeting schedule, commit yourselves. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'm seeing 5. All those opposed? 1, 2, 3. One, once, twice. I'm seeing 3 opposed. Abstentions? 3 abstentions. The motion to add March 10th to the calendar is passed. Thank you. There's one final item, Mr. Friedman. How quickly can you do it for us?
I can do this in 5 minutes. I don't know if I have any.
I asked members of indulgence to get to this last item.
Hey, I really appreciate your time. So a quick little bit of background as I set up. Last semester, the student assembly passed by overwhelming majority at their resolution 29 calling for the implementation of a committee that would review the open course evals system, right? So at this school right now, the only information that all students have access to university-wide about a course is about 4 or 5 times. This is not the case at many, many peer institutions. It's not the case at Cal within our own university. We recognize from the student assembly we passed a resolution to this effect. The resolution was considered and then deferred by both the president, a committee of the deans, and interim provost Terry Katz, with the reasoning being that because evaluations are a college-level issue, the discussion has to happen on a college level. And specifically because teaching excellence is different at different colleges, you want to be able to focus on that. Notwithstanding that the original proposal was just for a committee to be assembled, and that the committee was essentially already being assembled now, kind of ad hoc by everybody working on this, it might be nicer to get them all in one place. Anyway, I just wanted to show you what the proposal, what a similar system might look like. So does anybody here have colleagues at Yale that they want to know more about? Any faculty members? Yeah. All right. Okay, let's just look at sites then for fun. So at Yale, if you're trying to select a course, it'll look an awful lot like this. I'll want to know more about the class social psychology, so I'll look for an evaluation, and I'll find information here about the course load relative to other classes I've taken, whether I'm taking the class for my major, whether or not other students take it for distribution requirements, and their overall assessment of the course. And then I can go back and do this for a past semester. Additionally, there's a section for student comments, right, where you get information about the workload, about the resources, about the different types of topics covered, and how it fits into a general program of study. The basic argument why something like this is really, really useful is, although Cornell does have a shopping period, we promise students meaningfully, it's in our motto, any person, any study. That's impossible when no one has the information that I need about my courses, right? If I want to take a course in hotel and I don't know anybody in the hotel school, I either have to email all the professors I'm interested in or shop all of those classes. We're limiting students by their social network, by courses for which information is available online, and we're prejudicing students actually towards the easiest courses right now by the system, right? Because that's the reputation that courses get, and that spreads most massively, right? Everyone knows about oceanography and Psych 101. Not so many kids know about this excellent pro seminar in methodologies and history. I have no idea what that means, right? I have no idea what a pro seminar is. But if I had something that I could find out a bit more about the course instead of having to shop for it or email it if I'm shy or sheepish or anything.
So, go ahead.
Let me pick up where this is going. So it was deferred. No meetings were granted for students. As a result, we'll be bringing this to the colleges individually. We're starting with the College of Arts and Sciences. We'll be at the next meeting, and it'll be at the next meeting of the physics faculty at Cornell to discuss this. Hopefully, what we're trying to get based on for next semester is for as many professors as possible just to publish a tentative syllabus. We understand that it's very hard to keep the syllabus updated to commit to it, but I think at the very least, we can get students some information. I mean, students at other institutions, practically every one of our competitors has something like this. Harvard has a few reviews, MIT has something comparable, Yale has this, we have very little in comparison, I think we do better.
So my clarification is you're not asking us to take any action or zing anybody on your behalf, you're just informing us of we don't look as good as our peers, and you're moving forward with it and giving us an update.
Yeah, I'd love your support. I think the University Assembly could also call for the creation of this committee, because essentially this is one of those initiatives where, again, all the proper channels were followed, but there was no resources granted by President Skortner from Provost Harry Pass towards this. And we're really hoping this is going to
move.
So at Yale, they actually get two papers. There's a departmental form.
Thank you.
Even, and then you can just get that data. There's so many ways to do this. This is what's kind of frustrating about the refusal to continue processing this, is that there's so many ways of doing this that leaves that autonomous process alone for each college.
Thank you for the update. I recommend, I'm sure you're in contact with your SA colleagues about whether they want to sponsor a resolution of support through us. But in the meantime, thank you for the update and for the facts. We appreciate it. That's all the time we have for, ladies and gentlemen. It is 6:21. I am calling the meeting to adjourn.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.